Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Seventh Son, Congregation Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is September 11th, 2024, or it is the ninth day of Tishri, 2028. This is the day before the Atonement, and we're preparing ourselves for the Atonement. We're going to start our first service today, taking some timely greetings. Okay, it's going to be taken from two timely greetings, number 11, and the title of our sermon is The Way the Kingdom is to Come, and it's a text of address by the V.T. Hodder, October the 11th, 1947. And it says, for the Jews had built up an erroneous conception of what the kingdom was to be, and how and when it was to come. And so, when the Yahshua exposed their misconception, they became indignant. They were very angry, not because the kingdom which the Savior disclosed was not much more bountiful and practical than they had ever conceived, but because their errors were exposed. Thus heaven's favored people, the Jews, piled error upon error, and it brought upon themselves shame and disaster. Should the Christian's idea of the kingdom be somewhat erroneous too, also, and should we fail to profit by the mistakes of the Jews, then our fall would be even greater than that of the Jews. Let us therefore lay aside any preconceived ideas we may have and accept Yahshua's revealed truth, which brings us his ideas of the kingdom first today. Matthew 13:24-26. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, for the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field, but while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth the fruit, then appeared the tares also. The pasturing tares, which grow higher and sturdier than the wheat of Satan, inspires and by them fabricates erroneous theories concerning Yahweh's plan. For this, the tares, according unto the parable, so closely resemble the wheat that they cannot be discovered except after they bear fruit. That is, they can be discerned only by the final results brought forth by their works. And what can these results be? What else from our days that are not heaven inspired, may you expect in the church that selfishness, egotism, bigotry, worldliness, prejudice, hatred against reproof, and light on their evil deeds. Is it not their aim to exalt themselves rather than to exalt Yahshua and His truth? Okay, it says, I'll read this again. It says, for the pestering terrors which grow higher and sturdier than the wheat as Satan inspired, and by them fabricates the erroneous theories concerning Yahweh's plan. For the terrors, according unto the parable, so closely resembles the wheat that they cannot be discovered except after they bear fruit. That is, they can be discerned only by the final result brought forth by their works. And what can these results be? What else from the ideas that are not heaven inspired? Okay. May you expect in the church the selfishness, egotism, bigotry, worldliness, prejudice, hatred against reproof, and light on their evil deeds. Is it not their aim to exalt themselves rather than to exalt the Yahshua and His truth? This know also that in the last days, perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own self, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truth breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of the pleasure, more than lovers of the Yahweh, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. For of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women, laden with sin, led away with a divers lust, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. 2 Timothy 3:1-7. Okay, it says that Matthew 13:27-30. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tarried? He said unto them, An enemy hath done this. For the servants said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them, that both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say unto the reapers, gather you together, first the tares, and bind them in the bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Here we see that even the ideas of the most faithful servants of Yahweh, as for the setting up of his kingdom and weeding but the tares are not the same as the Yahweh's plan. For this cleansing work belongs only unto the angels of the heaven, and this they will do in the time of the harvest, after being commanded to do so, not before. In this parable, we are also told that the spiritual harvest is a time, not a momentary work, and that it brings the end of the world just as naturally as the year's harvest brings the end of the summer. Thus, you see that the separation of the wheat and tares takes place in the last days and in two different places. First, in the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17, Matthew 13:47-48, then in Babylon, Revelation 18:2-4. In the former, the tares are taken out from among Yahweh's people. But in the latter, Yahweh's people are taken out from among the tares, from the habitation of the devils, of the foul spirits, of the unclean and hateful birds. There are two fruits also. The first are from the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. Revelation 7:2-8. The church, and the second from all nations. Revelation 7:9. Matthew 13:31-32. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, for the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a grain of the mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among the herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Mustard seed being the smallest of all seeds, this parable shows that which is to start the kingdom will be very insignificant, contrary unto all human expectation. Nevertheless, like the mustard plant becomes the biggest of all herbs, so the kingdom shall grow and become the greatest of all kingdoms. This being contrary unto all human planning, it is but natural that those who are like the Nicodemus and continue to be ashamed to be identified with something that is unpopular, hated, and insignificant will as a result be left out of the kingdom. Matthew 13:33. Another parable spake he unto them, for the kingdom of the heaven is like unto the leaven, which a woman had took and hid in the 3 measures of meal, till the whole was leavened. For the kingdom is here again shown to start with something small. That little thing is to be like yeast in a loaf of bread. What could the leaven be but an unpopular message borne by some insignificant one and put into the church, the loaf, where the leaven is in the dough? Now, well, the leaven is in the dough now. Just watch it leaven the whole loaf of bread. For all the loaves that is made from that dough, it leavens all of them. Matthew 13:44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto the treasure hid in a field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. Those who will gain entrance into the kingdom are here represented as searchers of the great treasure, and when they find its location, the field, they are very eager to make it their own. They are certain of its worth and count it not a risk to sell all that they possess, whether much or little, to obtain the kingdom. What they sell is not only lands or houses, but anything which, if not disposed of, would keep them out of the kingdom. They are certain that they are making a good investment, that they are to get much more out of it than they put into it. On the other hand, those who are foolish, who do not know the value of it, feel they dare not make the investment and consequently will be the losers. Matthew 13:45-46. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, which when he had found one pearl of the great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Those who are to inherit the kingdom are here again represented as searching for a very valuable jewel, for the kingdom truth, for those who are to inherit the everlasting kingdom of heaven that is set up here on earth in these last days, in the 12th parabolic hour, that's last hour probationary time, with Yahshua sitting upon the throne of this kingdom, fulfilling Daniel 2:44-45, where it says, in the days of these 10 kings shall the Yahweh of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And those 10 kings are represented by the Arab nations that are surrounding the Israel today. And when they find it, they count it not a gamble to sell all they have in order to make it their own. They know that they are getting a bargain, as such an investment will actually make them rich. Both the man who bought the field containing a great treasure and the man who bought the pearl of great price sold everything they had in order to close the respective deals. But even though it took everything they had, they both did have enough to buy what they wanted. So it is that it matters not who we are, how rich or how poor we be, if we make up our minds to sell all and buy the kingdom, we will have just enough to buy it. Matthew 13:47-48. Again, the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into the vessel, but cast the bad away. For the net must represent the truth, the message of the kingdom, as it is cast into the sea, published and sent out. It is bound to catch the good and the bad. But when the net is drawn to shore, the bad are then cast out from among the good, and the good are put into the vessel and to the kingdom. Hence, merely because one is attracted by the mighty truth does not mean he is saved. His chance of staying forever with the truth depends on his meeting the Yahshua's expectations of him. Matthew 13:52. Then said he unto them, therefore every scribe which is instructed in unto the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which bringeth forth out of his treasure things new and old. Here the Master plainly points out that Yahweh's messengers of the kingdom bring out of the word things both old and new, things that are known and things that are unknown unto them. Thus it has ever been in the unrolling of the scroll, and thus it must be now. Luke 14:16-17. Then said he unto him, a certain man made a great supper and bade many, and sent his servant at the supper time to say unto them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. In this parable it is made known that in the closing hours of the probationary time, at supper time, about the end of the day, heaven is to send a message unto them that are bidden, unto them that already know the gospel of the Yahshua. In other words, they already know the plan of the salvation of the Brother of the Everlasting Covenant that is taught there in Hebrews 10:19-20, the new and living way, that's in the blood of Yahshua, unto the members of the Adventist Church. Okay. So it says, for the servant is to inform them that everything is now ready, that they should now come in for the great and long expected supper, a supper which they are to eat in the Master's mansion, the kingdom, not in their own. Luke 14:18-20. And they all, with the one consent, began to make excuses. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee have me excused. And another said, I have So I bought 5 yoke of the oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee have me assured. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. Those that here mentioned did not eschew themselves from the accepting of the gospel of Yahshua, that is, accepting the plan of the salvation of the brother, faith in the brother of the Yahshua, the new and living way, that they excuse themselves from going into their master's mansion. Okay, so the kingdom of heaven here on earth is where you'll find Yahshua's mansion, set upon the throne of David. So it is an actual physical place from taking their seats at his table. Yes, according unto the parable, those who had money to buy land, oxen, and houses, also to marry at the time the last call for the supper came, all excused themselves with the one consent, that the poor and afflicted, those who were in the streets and in the lanes, so to speak, who had nothing much of their own and were in the need of everything, were glad to go in for the supper. This is very natural. Those who are satisfied with what the world gives do not care to get out of it. Here you see why it is easier for a camel than it is for a rich person to get through the needle's eye, Matthew 19:24. Those whose only difficulty is in trying to get richer, those who are deeply engrossed with this world's goods, cannot take time to eat of the Master's Supper. Here fits the age-old saying, almost saved, but entirely lost. Here is vividly seen that to accept one truth, but to reject the next profits one nothing. The last call to the individual is what counts the most. At the times when the new truths have been introduced, millions have lost out only because they were too well satisfied with what they had, for they saw need of nothing better, or else they were too proud to accept the unpopular truth from one of the Yahweh's own appointed messengers. Thus it is that when Yahweh sends a message, rather than it being unto them a step upward towards salvation, it has been and still is to many a step downward toward damnation. Unto this end was the prophet instructed, go and tell this people, hear ye indeed, but understand not, and see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert, and be healed. Isaiah 6:9-10, Luke 14:22-23. And the servant said, Master, it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is a room. And the Yahshua said unto the servant, go out into the highways and the hedges, and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. The fact that in the city were those who had already been bidden when the Let's call for supper time unto them. Proves that the city represents the church. Unto them was the servant first sent. The highways and hedges, therefore, where the servant next went, where the servant next went, represents the world far and wide. Aside from the house of Israel, the Seventh Day Adventist Church today, where this parable fits as we are reading it, but the most important and very sad part to remember in this parable is that which is told in the verse that follows, Luke 14:24, "For I say unto you, that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper." This is what happened. As soon as they excused themselves, probation closed for them. They had no other chance of tasting his supper. Probation nevertheless remained open for those who had not yet been bidden, those who were in the highways and hedges could yet be saved. For the Seventh-day Adventist Church seems too well versed as unto the time probation closes for the world, but not at all informed that probation for her members closes at the very time they reject a heaven-sent message. Here is shown why the five foolish virgins found the door closed, as though they had later obtained the oil and gotten to the door. Their probation had closed. When they failed at the first opportunity to fill their vessel with the extra oil and extra message, Matthew 25:1-8, then while the unfaithful service has been cut asunder, Matthew 24:51, shall the kingdom of heaven be likened. Let's do that again. Then while the unfaithful, singular, one servant, is being cut asunder, that's the one of the two that's mentioned in Matthew 24:51, shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins. Which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. For this took place in Middle School Summit, Kermit, Texas, 2002-2003, with Rollis W. Johnson as this unfaithful servant that was cut asunder. And five of them were wise and five were foolish. For they that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil and their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out." Here is the truth that should not be lightly passed by any, for the oil can only represent revealed prophetic truth that lightens the path ahead, oil in a vessel. before being put into a lamp, however, cannot lighten the path of anyone. Hence, the oil and the vessel of the five virgins must represent an extra supply, extra truth, that came unto them during the period of the slumber and sleep. Well, they slumbered and slept from 1970 to 2003 at Kermit, Texas. I know that. For when at the third feeding pasture for the Seventh-day Adventists, and whenever they didn't wake up, they brought a close to the Seventh-day Adventist movement of Matthew 20, verse 5, that were called at the ninth hour in 1844. That movement came to a close in 2003 at Kermit, Texas. When the call was made, behold, the bridegroom cometh, all 10 virgins found the oil in their lamps consumed. The vessels of the wise, however, were full, and so they could refill their lamps. In the contrast, the foolish found that not only were their lamps out, but their vessels were empty also. For they then went to obtain the oil, but it did them no good, for they found the door closed unto them. They had been satisfied with what they had in their lamps, presuming that there was no need for more. Contrary unto their assumption, though, during the period of the slumber and sleep, they suddenly saw their lamps go out, finding themselves in the spiritual darkness and confusion. They were then anxious to get out, or to get the oil. Here is seen that the message that the church has during the period of the slumber and sleep is not sufficient to carry her members through unto the end. They need an extra message. Now, what is the difference between the oil and the lamp and the oil and the vessel? Just this. The oil that is in the lamp that already lightens the traveler's path toward the master's mansion must represent truth and the progress. That the oil and the vessel must represent truth, that is, to lighten one's path after the former truth has accomplished its work. For example, after the harvest, investigative judgment of the dead is passed, other truth, and that took place at Kermit, Texas, 2002, 2003. The harvest, the investigative judgment for the dead ended with Willis W. Johnson rejecting his truth. Of course, he's the first man judged according to 1 Peter 4:17. He was the ancient man before the house, according to Ezekiel 9:6. So, Ezekiel 9, then, judgment started at 2002 at Gilead Center. Ezekiel 9 opened up and started right there. Brother Johnson was the first one judged under Ezekiel 9. As the dead is passed. Other truths, even more important, must be introduced for the harvest of the living. I say more important truth because they are concerning the living themselves, concerning those whose own cases are to be weighed in the balances, those who personally are to be judged either as the wheat or as the tares, either as good fish or as the bad fish. Moreover, after the judgment of the dead, of which the Adventist Church has been preaching for a number of years, since 1844, and we're now in 2024, is over if the church does not then receive a new message, the message of the judgment of the living. She will have no message, no oil, for the time of the judgment of the living. So the Adventist Church has been teaching this judgment of the dead themselves for 180 years. From 1844, as the oil was available unto all 10 virgins, the parable makes clear that the message of the judgment of the living is brought to the church, but that only half the virgins avail themselves of it. When the judgment of the living begins and the cry is made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him," they will all arise, but only half of them will gain admittance, for the other half will have sinned against the Holy Spirit, will have rejected His truth. Consequently, when they knock on the door, the bridegroom's answer will be, "I never knew you. What foolishness, and what a disappointment that will be." This, you see, is not man's theory, brother and sister. It is Yahweh's plain truth. How sad the case, then, for those who are not only neglecting their own vessels, but are even preventing others from getting the extra oil now while it is dispensed unto all. Indeed, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth unless all of the lukewarm ready sin now at the first opportunity change their minds about being rich and increased with goods and in need of nothing. Matthew 25:14-30. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave the 5 talents, unto another 2, and to another 1, unto every man according unto his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise, he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth, and hid his master's money. He says, after a long time, the Yahshua of those servants cometh, and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, "Master, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more." His master said unto him, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy," it says Lord here. That means that Yahshua was their king. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, "Master, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them." His master said unto him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy master. Then he which had received the one talent came and said to the master, I knew that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and given where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast thy design. His master answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with the usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance, but from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. For the talents in this parable represents the Yeshua's goods, his timely messages for the people. Each of his servants is here represented as being given a certain amount of responsibility, but not beyond their ability. From this parable, we see that any service which does not measure up 100% to capacity, that does not double its talent, is not acceptable to Yahweh. Half-hearted service is not service at all, but only a great waste. Matthew 25:31-40. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats, and he shall sit the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in, naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Master, when saw we thee and hungry, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, insomuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. Here is pointed out that the self-centered person will never enter into the kingdom of Yahweh. Only those who are endeavoring to do something for the others, and especially to those who are of the household of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, the new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20, will ever enter into the joy of their Master, their Yahshua, their Redeemer and their Savior and their King, their Emancipator. Most certainly this coming of the Yahshua mentioned in these verses is not one in which the saints meet him in the air, but it certainly is the one in which he meets them in the judgment on the earth, the judgment of the living. He sits on the throne of his glory, on the throne of his church, and that's the tribe of Judah, the house of David, fulfilling the prophecy of Genesis 49:10, his kingdom. And from there he judges and separates the whole world. Some he places to his right and some to his left. Let us now view the separation of the church according unto the revelation. Revelation 3:14-16. And unto the angel, that would be the Brother W. Johnson, the last prophet put in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, from 1970 to 2003. And unto the angel, Brother W. Johnson, of the Church of Mount Gilead, at Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas, of the Laodiceans, write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of Yahweh. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would that thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. So he's warning Brother W. Johnson ahead of time, and he said, now, if you don't change this condition that you're in, then he said, I will spew you out of my mouth. And Yahshua did. He came to the threshold of the house at the Passover 2002. Brother Johnson had told us earlier from his pulpit there in the church at Gilead Center. He says, Yahshua is coming in person this Passover. It's the antitype of the Passover he had 2,000 years ago, before he was crucified. And Yahshua didn't come, and Brother Stephen Johnson said, well, this wasn't a year after all. According to Brother, Yahshua didn't come, but Yahshua did come. And Brother Johnson knew it not. For the angel, the one that has charge of the church, cannot represent any class but the ministry of the church, his servant. So Brother Jeff Johnson, he was in charge of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, but believe it or not, Gilead Center, those who are satisfied, lukewarm, who feel no need of anything, no need of an additional message for the judgment of the living, such will be spewed out unless they repent. This work, you see, represents the cleansing of his temple. Now we turn to Malachi 3:1. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and Yahshua whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith Yahshua of the host. For this verse introduces two persons, Yahshua and his messenger. And his messenger is antiquity Elijah, Malachi 4:5, and that messenger of the covenant, Malachi 3:1-3. And the language of today These verses would read as follows. Behold, I'll send my messenger. Let's read that again. Behold, I will send my messenger. And now, you could say, behold, I have now sent my messenger, Elijah David, as a messenger of the covenant, and he shall prepare the way before me, and Yahshua, whom you seek, and in whom you delight, shall suddenly come to his temple. Behold, he shall come, saith Yahshua of the host. Matthew 3:2-4. But who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire and like the fuller's soap, and he shall sit as a refiner and a purifier of the silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto Yahshua an offering in righteousness. There it is right there. So it shows that the people of the kingdom has to have this gold and silver to operate on. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Asherah, as in the days of the old, and as in the former years. Plainly, these verses foretell that the Asherah is the sin of the antitypical Elijah, Malachi 4:5, the prophet, before the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, before the judgment of the living members of his church began, before the separating of the tares from the wheat, the bad fish from the good. Then he purifies the sons of Levi, that would be the 144,000, the ministry that is to follow them. This took place in 2002 to 2003. Trumpet Texas took a whole year for this to take place. Yahweh assures us that before the work begins, he will send his messenger, the messenger of the promise, Elijah the prophet. Revelation 18:1-4. And after these things, I saw another angel come down from the heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon, the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of the devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And I heard another voice from the heavens saying, Come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sin, and that you receive not of her plague. These verses illustrate the separation that takes place in the so-called Christian world, that mark that the angel proclaimed the fall of Babylon and the time of the angel's loud cry and the time that the earth is lightened with the glory of the angel. Then it is that Yahweh's people are actually called to come out of Babylon. Moreover, in addition to what I just read, for the Yahweh to call his people out of the Babylon on account of her sin means that he must bring them into a place where there are no sins, into his purified church, his kingdom, the place that is free from sin and that is not in danger of the plague. Plainly then, the purification of the church first takes place, purification of the Seventh-day Adventist church first takes place, and then are the rest of his people called out of Babylon from all over the world as well. Remember now, this is the way in which the kingdom is to come. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed unto the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. For it is, for if the word spoken by the angels was steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of the reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? That's Hebrews 2:1-3. This brings the end of our study. This hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.